After that date, if any bombs existed, they would automatically explode. Even though some way could be discovered to protect the bombs temporarily. And that seems impossible. The moment someone tried to use them, they would blow up, killing the user. But just supposing it might be possible for someone to send a missile with an H-bomb over the country. Of what use would it be? Simply to destroy? Because if the Tesla anti-war machine was in use, no one could enter the country. And after we saw the bomb coming, or even after it blew part of us up, we could still, from behind the wall of light, blow the enemy to bits and without the use of a single rocket. Rockets aimed at us would be useless, as would bombs in actuality, because anything would explode when it got within 200 miles of the wall, even if by some fantastic method it could be protected up to that point. So all these speculations really have no practical value, but they do help us to understand that Tesla thought of every possibility and prepared for every eventuality. Although Tesla himself loathed all deadly devices, nevertheless he knew that plenty of other people preferred war to God's peace. So when he designed the anti-war machine, he first worked out in detail all the possible weapons the machine might be called upon to destroy. He designed a jet-propelled airplane and an atomic bomb. The whole device radio-controlled, and able to cover a distance of 12,000 miles. And this was long ago. Tesla could easily look 100 years into the future. In a letter which Tesla wrote to me in 1935, he said, speaking of his anti-war machine, "My discovery ends the menace of airplanes, submarines, rockets or space machines, regardless of their height or speed. A century from now every nation will render itself immune from attack by my device. I believe, as I believe in God, that the adoption of Tesla's machine will prevent war. Actually, I have been fighting for Tesla since 1928, and have written hundreds of letters, newspaper and magazine articles about his inventions, so the world should know about this wonderful man. Yes, indeed, the world should know about Tesla, but, the hundreds of letters received by Mr. Matthews and by the present author indicate clearly that most people are just finding out how to spell his name. Almost every letter received begins something like this: I never heard of Nikola Tesla until I read your excerpts from Return of the Dove. Where can I find out more about this wonderful man? Well, no one will find out more about this wonderful man if the silence group has its way. Since the day that Tesla was brought to the Earth from Venus, he has been plagued by the silence group. This is a carefully organized super secret group within the forces of darkness. It has functioned on this Earth down through millions of years, directed by black magicians who were bent upon destroying humanity rather than permit the race to become merged with the forces of light. During 19 million years, Sanat Kumara and his hierarchs have steadfastly defeated the forces of evil at every turn, and all without doing any damage to the delicately adjusted balance of free will, a balance which is the only spiritual guarantee of human evolution into the light. During the late 30s, the last of the black magicians was caught during a moment when he had let down his guards, and he was removed from the planet. Prior to that time, the forces of light had been catching up with the black magicians, one by one, and removing them. This was the last character of his kind. Capturing a black magician and all his evil links is not easy, and it is very unlovely. Many disciples prefer not to talk about it, but in these tragic times it seems that the dear public should be able to bear up under some of these startling revelations, wake up to what is going on around them, and become aware of conditions which they are often unwittingly supporting to the hilt. A black magician always operates in an astral body, but he usually has a physical flesh body hidden away in a cave to serve as an anchorage for his contaminated energy. He usually steals this flesh body, for he is too shrewd to incarnate, even if he could find parents, and besides, he does not wish to be hampered by a physical body which he must tend and care for. He prefers to employ thousands of human tools who do not know that they are being used for his purposes. He can manipulate them, through their little egos, without their ever suspecting that they are being played for suckers. Some of these human tools at the very top of the heap do know their boss, but they are virtually black adepts in their own right, so secrets are safe with them. It is these wise guys and dolls at the top who form the invisible government or the silence group, which is still in control today on the physical plane only. Invisible, that is, to all but the Christ forces. Those heads remain very secluded, and, in turn, hand down directives to their stooges who are active in politics, church unity, diplomacy, banking and economics, education, and in every line of commerce and industry which is in any sense associated with big business. Today they are especially active in connection with newspapers, magazines, television and radio, which they control through advertising. Because books do not carry advertising, the dark forces have never been able to control the book field directly. However, they do control it in subtle ways through various book clubs, and through newspaper advertising, critics, and bookshop sales. Page 218. The dark forces are very active in the field of medicine, and in connection with drugs, pharmaceutical products, vaccines, and even foods. Particularly in foods such as candies, ice cream, bottled drinks, and, of course, in cigarettes, liquors and diversions such as movies. But in these commercial fields, their biggest control goes back to advertising. They use the weapon of fear induced through threats of economic boycott. They are also today very, very active in the utilities field, and in all the big industries connected with petroleum, steel, aluminium, and so forth. They are in complete control of all boom and bust cycles, even to spreading the rumor that these are caused by sunspots. The black magicians themselves operate and control their tools from the astral plane. Anyone can be a tool, and all of us have been tools at certain times, even though we may not have spent an entire embodiment working at it professionally, so to speak. After 19 million years of this astral control, the last black magician has been taken and they will trouble the planet no more. But their tools are still functioning in a big way, totally unaware that the last boss has been liquidated. They are due to discover this soon, sometime after the news gets about that the axis of the Earth is completely straightened. Then will the darkened minds of humanity begin to get a glimpse of the light. However, the tools at best are only human, after all, and not always reliable, human nature being what it is. So the black magicians on the astral plane usually had a flesh body stored away somewhere on Earth, stored away in a cave somewhere like a hibernating animal. Through this flesh body they could anchor their foul energy firmly in the Earth and keep it anchored. The last black magician who was taken had a flesh body hidden away in a cave in Western Europe. The forces of light did not intend to remove him astrally and leave this focus on evil behind. So finally they closed in on his hibernating flesh form and the angelic legions set to work. They found that this particular black magician had fangs which extended out from the face, and then far beyond that area the fangs continued in astral matter. This astral line carried a tremendous charge of evil force, and these lines cut deep into the earth, right through soil and rocks, and extended for miles around the globe. In other words, this character had a firm grip on the situation. First, the angels had to work from the ends of the astral fangs, and draw back into the body itself all the evil force which had been extended through the earth. When all this evil was drawn back into the flesh body, the whole mass was transmuted with violet fire. Then the weary, liberated atoms were carried back to the sun for repolarization. If this seems too fantastic to be true, let us glance briefly at the other side of the picture. In certain parts of the world are to be found deposits of diamonds, rubies, emeralds and other precious and semi-precious stones. How did they get there? At those points adepts of the Christ forces once lived. They anchored the energy of light so firmly in the earth, in order to spiritualize the soil and raise the vibrations, that the ray energy became concretized into lovely gems. Diamonds are concretized first ray energy, rubies are concretized sixth ray energy, emeralds are fifth ray energy, and so on. Adepts leave behind them only beauty upon the earth and within the earth. Naturally, those who are fighting the forces of light use similar methods of anchoring energy, but they anchor only ugliness, contamination and astral filth. Page 220. It is to be noted that the actual work of cutting away these lines of evil force was handled by the angelic kingdom. The angels took care of the astral cloud over Africa, the compound over Siberia, and the angels have straightened the axis of the earth. Yet the very people who have been served by the forces of light through removal of these evil foci, and by the tremendous job of straightening the axis, are the ones who still feel that they can live without angelic help, and even without giving their Creator more than a passing how do you do on Sunday morning. These are the very people who are ready to know toe every time the forces of darkness crack the whip. Most of them are considered nice people, sometimes they are even pleasant, although they are more often tight-lipped and hostile, angry and rebellious. They sneer and snicker a great deal, too. Especially when some clean-minded, open-hearted individual mentions spaceships from Venus. Now that all black magicians have been removed from the Earth, the astral plane cleaned up, earthbound entities removed, the compound empties of refugees from evolution, and the idle disembodied rounded up and sent to etheric training centers. The picture begins to look brighter for that portion of humanity devoted to serving the forces of light. But for the devotees of the dark forces, the sinister secretives, the greedy grabbers, the warmongers and all the lovers of blood and gore, the conniving politicians and diplomats, and the front pew sitters in the whitened sepulchres of church unity. For all these the picture could not look more gloomy. The forces of light are going to make sweeping changes on this planet within a very short time, and those who are not in accord with the forces of light are in for a very, very, very rough time. If anyone wishes to look with nostalgia over past history, he should take that backward glance right now, because history as we have known it is going to vanish like a dirt fog in a bright, hot Sunday. It is a well-known fact that the Silence Group has been responsible for handing down directives to government officials, scientists and church leaders, which have frightened their spineless authorities into keeping all spaceship information from the public. These officials have deliberately hoarded all revealing references to spaceships and space people from other planets. This hoarding has been directed by the Silence Group, composed of top-flight black disciples who are now leaderless. Therefore, the whole Silence Group is due to collapse, carrying their thousands of manipulated human tools into a state of confusion and possibly panic. The various governments have indicated that they could not give out any information on flying saucers because the knowledge would cause panic among the masses. If there is any panic, it will start, not among the masses, but among those who have been imposing censorship on the press, on TV and radio, in particular, and among those black disciples who have been acting through political, church and money channels. There is certainly no doubt in the minds of any thinking persons today about where censorship originates. Since the late 30s we have constructed a whole new rubber stamp language of gobbledygook consisting of words such as, secret, top secret, super top secret, super duper top secret. Let no one think that the Silence Group has just got its second wind. It has been in active control for many, many centuries. Long ages ago, in the time of what we would call ancient civilizations, spaceships kept our planet under strict surveillance. People frequently observed these spaceships and many of the observations were recorded in the Bible. When Moses and the Israelites followed a cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night, they were following a spaceship. When the three wise men followed the Star of Bethlehem, they were following a natural spaceship or force field directed by the Christ. But the story then, as now, was readjusted so that it had the same old phony ring that it has today. People are not seeing spaceships, so the tools of the dark forces claim. People are seeing stars, birds, weather balloons, kites, temperature inversions and hallucinations, but not spaceships. Never, 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 quote the black vultures. Do people see spaceships? But the space people, who have a telepathic record of every thought on Earth, know for a fact that those in power in high places, in the military, in governments, in money marts, and in church unity, do not want the man in the street, the little taxpayers, to know about spaceships. If he did know about them, and if he had a grain of common sense left in his brainwashed head, he would look to the space people as his only hope, as his one salvation, and he would be looking in exactly the right direction. Little man, this is not the time to bow your head in abject servility. This is the time to raise your eyes to the skies and to your God. Naturally, those who are crazed with power lust want nothing except more power. Dope addiction is said to be a mild affliction by comparison. The power boys are so deluded that, despite the fact that they are in full possession of flying saucer information, they still hope to somehow outwit the space people. In this age of daily newspapers, radio and TV, they must carefully select and release early those bits of information which have been chosen by their great propaganda organization. These bits may contain ridicule, big whopping lies, delusions, or any other type of calculated deceit, but never, never, never the least hint of the truth. And what if the newspapers and TV and radio stations refuse to go along with this imposed censorship? They will be taken care of in approved economic gangster fashion through advertisers who serve as tools for the dark forces. But the big ball, the great big 19 million year shindig, is all but over now. It might even be well for the grey flannel boys along Madison Avenue to begin to look toward conserving their wardrobes. It is just possible that in the coming shuffle they might lose their last pair of pants. Part 8, the Otis T-Car story. It was in November 1957. That same glad November, decked with a sparkle and a twinkle, and with long, tall nights stretching upward to the stars. When Otis T. Carr of Baltimore, Maryland, announced that free energy and space flight had been once again made available to the inhabitants of this planet, Carr, a disciple of Tesla, has come up with two new inventions. One is an electrical accumulator and the other a gravity motor, both utilizing the power of the sun and other forces of nature found in free abundance in the atmosphere. They are strictly free energy devices, which Carr claims may be used to power anything from a hearing aid to a spaceship. Although they are machines, just as surely as the Tesla anti-war machine is a mechanical device, yet they follow the principles of nature so closely as to be almost organic in function. Like other New Age mechanisms, the car machines point the way to what may be expected from Ascended Master Saint Germain's scientific program for the Aquarian Age. The gap between organic and inorganic science is being closed rapidly, even in the minds of the laboratory experts who created the breach in the first place. The gap did not exist in actuality. It existed only in the minds of those who peered through very, very inadequate microscopes. It was because of this delusion concerning the gap that science separated itself off from religion. The only religion that will bind one back to the source, in the correct meaning of the word, is the science of man's evolution. The church that a man attends plays no part in his evolution, except perhaps to retard it. God is pure energy and he does not attend a church. He is also pure love, and he desires that his prodigal children return home to him at the earliest possible moment. We can only go home to the Father's house when we have finished with our classroom work on this earth. The entire Aquarian Age program is, therefore, dependent upon having an abundance of leisure time for evolutionary study. We must give up that ancient device of earning our living by the sweat of our brow, get busy with our homework, and make our ascension. Master Saint Germain is well aware that machines are necessary to accomplish the Aquarian program for all people everywhere. The homespun way of life may be quaint and even colorful, but is it dreadfully inefficient? There are 10 billion souls who must be processed through this Earth training center during the next 2,000 years. There will not be time for anyone to sit around doing hand embroidery in order to pass away the hours. Actually, the New Age machinery, much of it invented by Saint Germain himself, is ready and waiting. But humanity is not ready to accept it. Therefore, in the interim period it is necessary for men like Carr and Matthews to invent machines which will carry the world peacefully through the transition period. Further, such inventions serve to anchor the New Age energies in physical matter, raising its vibrations and lifting karma, And that is a very important factor from the hierarchical point of view. Adepts are not permitted to just hand out inventions to the human race, however desirable those inventions may be. That is why men like Tesla, Matthews, and Carr must serve as outposts of consciousness. They have human free will and can put forward inventions without imposing on the free will of others. It is up to humanity to accept or reject inventions which are offered in the open competitive market. Carr has realized this fully, and has organized a solid business corporation under the normal conventions of the American free enterprise system. This is the system which prevails today, for good or for evil, and in order not to interfere with man's free will, Carr has arranged his enterprise to fit into the established way of life. It may not be tomorrow's way of life, but it exists today and we must accept it in good grace until change is indicated. Adjustments must proceed in an orderly manner, for it is the desire of the hierarchy and the space people that the transition from the old age to the new be made without fear or panic, stress or strain. There is no need to talk of impending cataclysms, for with the straightening of the Earth's axis in 1958, the greatest period of danger is over. It was on a summer day in 1925 that Otis T. Carr was busy with his new duties as a package clerk in a large midtown hotel in New York. He had just arrived in the city to study art, and he found employment in order to cover his tuition. First, he had felt impelled to come to New York. Upon arrival, he had felt impelled to apply for a job in a particular hotel. He was put to work at once and was just getting acquainted with his surroundings when Nikola Tesla wound his prophetic way through the subterranean passages of the lower basement and approached the new package clerk. "When you finish your duties here," said Tesla with grave dignity, "go out and buy 4 pounds of unsalted peanuts and bring them to my suite." He handed the lad from Elkins, West Virginia, sufficient money to cover the purchase, plus a generous gratuity. The gratuity was part of the Tesla legend. To him the laborer was very, very worthy of his hire. Otis was not surprised at the nature of the request because, as he had often been told, in New York one could expect anything to happen. It was not in the least like Elkins. The package clerk carried out the order and delivered the peanuts to Tesla. Meanwhile he had made a few inquiries among the other clerks, and he found that Tesla was a great scientist who fed peanuts to pigeons. He even took care of the sick and injured pigeons and kept many of them in baskets upstairs in his suite. Upon making the delivery, young Carr was invited by Tesla to come in for a chat. This was the beginning of one of the most unusual and most fascinating stories of discipleship that has yet come to light in modern times. Usually people look upon the training of a disciple as something extremely mystical and esoteric, something that takes place within a lamasery or secluded retreat, far from the haunts of men and pigeons. But in this instance, and it is certainly one of the most successful instances of discipleship on record, most of the training took place on the steps of the New York Public Library. Day after day, in good weather and bad, young Carr carried peanuts to Tesla, and day after day, the elderly scientist and his young protégé strolled slowly along certain streets where flocks of pigeons were wont to gather in anticipation of the scattered nut meats. The pilgrimage usually ended on the steps of the library on the west side, facing Bryant Park. There the two sat side by side, with Tesla luring the birds to eat out of his hand, while he explained to young Carr the fascinating details of their mysterious intelligence. Tesla is said to have talked but little in those years, but fortunately young Carr was not inhibited by any knowledge of this fact. He asked the great genius so many questions and listened with such rapt eagerness to every syllable, that Tesla soon gave him a nickname, the Sponge. This served as a little joke between two good friends. But actually the name was well chosen, as Tesla realized when he selected it. When the average disciple is in training, he gushes forth questions like a fountain in full play. It would seem to an observer that such an individual could not possibly absorb the answers, even if answers are forthcoming from a teacher. Usually they are not, for the wise teacher merely listens, and from time to time, when he can get a word, he offers certain explanations. However, in all correct esoteric training, it is the God presence of the individual who does their actual teaching, not a guru. The guru may be present at the side of the disciple, but that is merely to provide a certain warmth of companionship. It is often much easier for a student to talk to a teacher than it is to hurl questions at empty space. Esoteric training is based on certain scriptural phrases. Before you have asked, I have answered. Ask and you shall receive. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. Seek and you shall find. I am the way, the truth and the light. It is this attitude of seeking, questioning, asking, constant wonderment, that is the hallmark of the disciple. Direct answers from a teacher are not only unnecessary, but often confusing. It is absolutely necessary for the disciple to ask, for that is the spiritual law. The presence will do the answering when and if necessary. The presence does not pour useless knowledge into the brain of a student. Only school teachers do that sort of thing. A disciple may ask a question and wait 25 or 50 years for an answer, but when the answer comes, as it surely will, it will flash into the mind at the exact moment that it is needed. Therefore, when Tesla teasingly named young Carr the sponge, he indicated that he knew Carr was storing up knowledge that he could draw upon at any time in the future when he truly needed it. Assuredly, he did not need to understand the workings of the universe in order to sit on the steps of the library with Tesla and toss peanuts to pigeons. Tesla's correct attitude was proved again and again during the 30 years that followed the 3-year period of Carr's training. Carr never saw Tesla again or had further contact with him after the 3rd year. During the 30 subsequent years, Carr spent hours daily in his own little workshop, performing the thousands of experiments that led to final success with the gravity motor and electric propulsion system. There in the workshop he found that he could, at any time, dip into the reservoir of his photographic memory, and bring forth in total recall every needed thought concerning sine wave or coil winding or other Tesla applications and innovations. Carr had no formal engineering training, nor had he any knowledge of esotericism before meeting Tesla. However, he was so inspired by the Superman that he later steeped himself in philosophies of the East and the West, and ranged far and wide in his reading and studying, covering a vast field of knowledge. Like the martyred Bruno, Carr has come to be known as the academician without academy. As he read and studied over the years, he always followed Tesla's example by going straight to the heart and brain of nature for his knowledge. He quickly discovered how to sort the absolutes from the mountains of dialectic chaff in the world's accumulated words and works. He never wasted precious time repeating what was proved. As a result of his great perceptive guidance, it is estimated that Carr has advanced scientific achievement at least a century by concrete application of his free energy discoveries. Like Tesla, he harbors no secrets about his inventions. He is more than happy to discuss them with anyone who will listen. Also, like Tesla, he has been unable thus far to sell them or even give them away. But that situation will change rapidly for both Carr and Tesla, probably in a matter of weeks now. As Saint Germain's new Aquarian program gets into full swing, Carr, philosophically at least, is already allied with Ascended Master Saint Germain, inasmuch as Saint Germain, at his last embodiment as Francis Bacon, at which time he wrote plays and sonnets under the pseudonym of William Shakespeare. Otis Carr has rooted his entire development in a total acceptance of Shakespeare. ? Poetic dictum, there's a divinity that shapes our ends, rough hew them how we will. Carr is a man who is characterized by an attitude of constant gratefulness. He is not only grateful to God and to Tesla, but his gratitude extends back to Archimedes and forward to Einstein, for he feels that the application of certain scientific principles down through the ages by countless discoverers and scientists, all contributed to his own inventions. This attitude is especially apparent in Carr's speech and writings. He stubbornly sticks to the plural form, we, in his narration of accomplishment. When questioned about this, he spoke of the total principles proved by the great men of history, and how each proof had entered into his final concept of the gravity motor and electrical accumulator.